Hello and welcome to Value Driven Data Science, brought to you by Genevieve Hayes Consulting. I'm Dr. Genevieve Hayes, and today I'm joined by Hikari Senju to discuss AI-generated advertising and the implications for the future of content creation and content creators. Hikari is the founder and CEO of OmniKey, an AI platform that generates, analyzes, and optimizes personalized advertising content at scale. He's a Harvard computer science graduate and also co-founded tutoring app QuickHelp, which he later sold to Yap.com. Hikari, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Genevieve. I'm really excited to be here.
So the idea of targeted marketing is nothing new. Even before the advent of computers and data science, businesses have always tried to optimize their advertising campaigns by tailoring their advertisements to their ideal buyers. Data science allowed businesses to become more effective at this targeting. However, it was still necessary for businesses to manually create the advertising content they wanted to share with their target buyers. That is, until recently. We're now at a point in history where advances in technology have made it so that it is not only possible to use data and AI techniques to identify who businesses should target their products to, but also to generate advertising content optimized to produce the best results. And that's something, Hikari, that your company, OmniKey, is able to do. And we're going to discuss how that works during this episode. Of course, such advances aren't without consequences for both the creators of advertising content and the future of content creation in general. Many copywriters have already reported a drop in their earnings since the launch of ChatGPT. And tools such as this will inevitably further impact the lives of people who were previously responsible for creating such content manually. And that's something we're also going to look at. But to begin with, Hikari, can you give us the 2-minute overview of what OmniKey is and how it came to be?
Sure, absolutely. So OmniKey generates personalized content at scale. The way our tool works is that a customer trains our models on their brand. They upload their product photos, their product asset, descriptions of their company, brand rules, brand guidelines, image guidelines, all that gets fed into a generative model. They also connect their advertising platforms and all the marketing and performance data regarding what types of content is driving sales, what types of content is driving engagement. All that data is fed into a model to then generate thousands and really more variations of content for them to help them scale their advertising across different audience targets, across different advertising platforms for many of their SKUs and different product offerings they have, and make it easier for a business to scale and grow their business. And we have an approval flow where customers can provide feedback to the model and train our model and teach our model to then generate better relevant content. And so it's this feedback loop of training a model on the brand, generating content, launching that content, seeing how it's performing, and also having the marketing director or creative director provide feedback on the model so that our model is constantly learning more about what it means to be that brand.
Previously, you mentioned that you're generating personalized advertising content. What exactly do you mean? Is it personalized for the platform the advertising will be hosted on, personalized for the brand, or personalized for the individual who will see the ad?
So it's personalized for the brand and it's personalized for the audience who is seeing that content.
So would it be personalized for me as an individual or for me as a female in a particular age range living in Australia?
Yeah, it depends on the platform. Some platforms, you can do really hyper-targeting, personalized targeting with you as an individual, Genevieve. And then others, it's you're more in a cohort of similar people. So maybe based on your interests or based on your demographics or your zip code and things along those lines. So it really depends on the platform, the level of personalization. But yes, when we say personalization, we really mean, you know, to make it as effective as possible for the advertiser to communicate a message to you.
What would an ad that was personalized for me as an individual look like? Can you give me an example?
Sure. So let's say that advertiser knows that you like running and you like certain colors and you like running in a certain location or you're located in a certain area. Well, when I'm generating content for you, then I'd want that image, first of all, to reflect your interests in terms of colors or the keywords or the kind of imagery that we showcase. Maybe it's in the background image is somewhat familiar or similar to the area that you live. And we're using words and keywords and phrases that either you yourself or your cohort of people have historically engaged well with. And so then we're personalizing the messaging, we're personalizing the imagery, where we're showing that content. And then on the brand side, even as we're personalizing that content, that is aligned and brand safe, and it doesn't deviate from the brand guidelines, because you can optimize to the point where you can start violating certain brand principles and rules. And so we want to make it so that the brand is scaling there, but even as they're scaling, they're not losing what makes their brand unique.
Okay. So it might be, if we're selling, say, Nike t-shirts, you might have this runner who's running somewhere down the road from where I live and wearing a Nike t-shirt that happens to be in one of my favorite colors, but it's also a color that works well with Nike's brand guidelines.
Yeah, so that's a great example. A Nike t-shirt, for example, has very different value props, right? It could be that it's sweat wicking and it's great for athletics, or it could be that it's great for yoga or it's great for other activities. Well, you want to probably focus on different value props based on who's seeing that ad. So if we know you're a big runner, and then maybe we want to showcase that value prop, the fact that it's great, it's sweat wicking, and you can run long distances without like sweating through your shirt or something like this. That value prop is something we want to focus on in both the imagery and in both the mass, versus maybe if it's somebody else, they're more into yoga. And so we want to then highlight that value prop and that kind of imagery when showcasing that product.
Okay, that's pretty cool. So how much work does the human user have to do once they've loaded all this information into the platform, and how much work is done by OmniKey itself?
Yeah, so it's a human in the loop. And so the human, the marketing director, the creative director definitely needs to communicate to the platform. We have this brand management page where they really specify all the creative restrictions and copy restrictions and visual restrictions, as well as the essence of their brand. And they have to upload their brand guidelines and all the brand assets. And that does take a lot of work in terms of just making sure that we have as holistic of an understanding of their brand as possible. Then they can use our tool to generate variations of content. And they're involved. They're generating those variations. They're editing those variations. They're providing feedback to the tool saying this variation is good and this variation isn't good. They're editing copy. They're providing inputs in terms of who their target audience is and other information related to that particular campaign. So maybe it's a holiday season campaign or it's a back to school campaign. Well, all that context for that specific campaign also has to be communicated and input into the platform. And then we generate assets, and oftentimes the AI generative assets aren't perfect. And so they have to edit those assets and paint them with quite different variations of that asset. And so the human is involved throughout this process. It's not a completely autonomous, just set it and forget it kind of thing, because we want the human involved in this process. We want the person to be in control of the brand, in control of the messaging. And I think that's something that's particularly that brands do care about. They care about control. And so our tool lets them 10x their productivity. They can create 10 times more content, and they can also better analyze and keep track of 10 times more content. We have an analytics tool as well for measuring the performance of this content and seeing how it's resonating. But they're still in control of the messaging and kind of the end experience that the consumer is having.
So the principles behind it are similar to that you'd have with ChatGPT. So with ChatGPT, you don't just give it a prompt, get whatever they spit out, and just run with it. You have to review it and make sure it matches what you want. And you might have to tweak things to make sure it's perfect at the end. Is that right?
Yeah. So it's kind of like that. The thing that ChatGPT doesn't do, that what we do, is ChatGPT doesn't have context on your brand. ChatGPT doesn't have integrations with your ad platforms to have real-time insights and performance data regarding what's actually driving sales. ChatGPT doesn't help you create A/B tests and kind of launch those A/B tests. And so it's more connected to data in some ways, your brand data and your performance data, and has more of a workflow associated with advertising creative. But yeah, I mean, it's similar context of like an AI copilot is kind of, I think, the current state of art of AI tools is, this is a copilot to help you achieve a certain goal. In this instance, it's advertising success.
Yeah, I wasn't actually trying to suggest that ChatGPT could actually do what OmniKey could do, because that's pretty clear that it couldn't. But basically, OmniKey is an assistant rather than a replacement for these marketing creatives.
What we say is that you are not going to be replaced by an AI. You're going to be replaced by somebody utilizing AI.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to be replaced, then you have to use AI. I mean, and furthermore, this is true within a company. So the person using AI within a company is going to be more productive than the person not using AI within the company, but also, I would say, competitively within the ecosystem of the businesses. The company that harnesses AI effectively is going to outcompete the companies that don't.
Just like any technology. I mean, as we were talking before this episode, you know, a calculator. Someone who's doing maths with a calculator is going to be far more effective than someone who's doing maths with a pen and paper.
Exactly. Such is the power of technology. It's now applied to creativity. And I think it's really exciting. It should, if anything, unlock and unleash level of creativity for humanity than that we've ever seen. So now we'll have a billion artists and a billion creators, just like the calculator created. It made everyone, powered them with, even if you weren't good at math, you could do calculations. And so I think it's a really exciting time to be a creator.
Out of interest, have you done any research to compare the performance of the advertising content produced by OmniKey against that produced by a human content creator, you know, with regard to sales, for example?
Yeah. So generally, our system, we have our case studies on our website. Generally, we drive a 2x increase in return on ad spend. So the baseline metric you were having before and then after using it's generally twice. The reason why is not just because the content is quality is better or more personalized, just also because you're creating more content. Because the old world was, you maybe have one or two pieces of content, you're showing the same piece of content to a million people or a couple million people. They're all seeing the same thing. Well, now that campaign is probably less performative than having 10 different variations of content to a million viewers versus maybe ideally the end state being a million unique pieces of content for a million people. And so just by better able to have more pieces of content that is personalized for distinct interest groups and people seeking different, maybe different things and different values within product drives more efficacy. Also, there are other things like ad fatigue. So when someone's seeing the same ad over and over again, they mentally block out that ad. And so you want to break through ad fatigue by keeping the content fresh and keeping the content novel. And so you want to constantly be launching new pieces of content to stay top of mind for that consumer. And then also, generally, it takes about 7 to 12 impressions for an ad to drive a conversion or for a brand to drive conversion. So let's say I'm thinking of buying a product. Well, generally, I need to engage with that brand about 7 times through an ad or some other way for me to say buy a product on their website. But if you're showing the same ad to the same person 7 times, well, they're going to probably start mentally blocking it out after the second or third time. But if you have 7 unique pieces of content communicating different value props and you're kind of guiding them through the user journey and the buyer story, maybe you start with more of an explanation of the story of the company. Then you talk about unique value props that are relevant to them. And then maybe you focus on a different value prop and then you show them a video and an image. And then maybe you end with a discount or a testimonial. That is a more compelling and useful way of spending advertising dollars than just showing them the same piece of content over and over again. So that also drives higher efficacy as well. So generally just having more pieces of content drives higher efficacy and AI lets you do that.
Last time I was visiting my parents, my mom listens to the news on the radio. And she's telling me that some of the advertisements that they have on the radio, she has heard them for about the past 5 years. And she has determined that she will never buy from these people because she is so sick of their ad. So something like this sounds like it would avoid that problem.
Yeah, I mean, why do people dislike ads? Because historically, ads just have not been very good. The ideal case of an ad is that it's communicating to a relevant, willing buyer a value prop that will help them with their life. You know, I enjoy running, but my shoes cause me feet problems. If I see an ad that is, you know, communicating me a shoe that can solve this pain point for me, then that benefits my life. And that benefits the end brand as well. It's a win-win. And that's what advertising really should be. But that is not necessarily the way it has been. And partly just technologically, it's like advertising hasn't caught up to the media ecosystem of today. So showing the same piece of advertising to hundreds of millions of people work when everybody was watching the same TV shows and ingesting the same media content and living in the same media like milieu, like in the 1960s or 70s when everyone's watching one of 3 TV channels and they were listening to one of 3 artists and like, everyone understood all the same relevant context. But now we live in a world where the content is already personalized. You know, everyone's social media feed is different. Everyone's information diet is unique. And yet advertising is still kind of in this old world where everyone's still kind of seeing the same piece of content. And that friction causes frustration with the consumer where they're like, these ads I find to be very annoying and they're intrusive and they're not relevant to me. and they detract from the experience. But if an ad can be personalized, just like the content that you're ingesting on that's not an advertising piece of content, well, then that should benefit the consumer as well as the advertiser. So that's really what we're enabling.
I know you have a background in computer science, but did you have any prior experience in marketing and advertising prior to launching OmniKey?
Yeah, so I used to run advertising marketing at a company, and it's really interesting that a computer scientist runs advertising marketing. The path to that was that I had started an education company, as you mentioned, in college, and this company was acquired. And as part of the acquisition, I became the head of marketing at the acquirer. And so that was kind of the unique path in which a computer scientist was running marketing. And that's really where I saw this opportunity to apply generative AI. In terms of my interest in generative AI, it's actually quite longstanding. My grandfather worked at IBM and my dad's an artist. And so I grew up in this kind of intersection of art and technology. And so when I saw the early generative models, when I was cross-registering at MIT and taking a lot of AI coursework at MIT about a decade ago, that got me very excited about technology, because the idea of an AI generating art, especially back then, was kind of mind-blowing. The idea that AI could be creative. And so that's how I got into generative AI initially, was through generative art. And so I was playing around with this technology on the side, and then became head of marketing, and then saw this opportunity to apply generative art in this domain of advertising. And that got me to start the company back in 2018.
Still seems kind of weird that a company that's taking over your startup would say, we want you to become, or that you would say that you wanted to become the head of marketing and advertising as part of the takeover. Who had that idea, and what was the motivation behind it?
Yeah, so this is the acquirer, and he bought my company, and he's a dear friend and somebody I owe a lot to, especially in buying my previous company. I think he saw something in me where I think being the CEO of a startup, and that's what I was. I had started a company in ed tech, and I was a CEO. You kind of have to develop this kind of sales marketing hustle, like this instinct of how do I get the word out? I mean, in many ways, an entrepreneur in the first couple of days is like the chief salesperson, the chief marketer of the company. And so I did do a lot of marketing as part of running my previous company. I was sending email campaigns, and I was creating content and thinking of like cheap ways of getting the word out. And so I think he saw that in me, and he said, well, that kind of entrepreneurial mindset of how do you get the word out? He valued that in my experience. So he had me running marketing and growth at his company. And also kind of growth, and growth in particular is also a bit more, it's kind of a rebranded marketing, but it is a bit more like data science and mathy, that you're kind of like analyzing funnels and analyzing the conversion rates and steps at each step of the funnel, like from impressions to landing page to website signups to conversion events further and further down the funnel. And so there was this kind of like more of a mathematical, systematic approach way of thinking about marketing and getting users for your product. And so I think my computer science background might have kind of helped me there as well. I mean, those are some of the reasons I can imagine, but you'd have to ask him.
Yeah, I've had quite a few marketing people on this podcast, and I've found that marketing people are some of the best people when it comes to creating business value from data. So if you learned that when you're working as the CEO of your first company, then you're probably going to be very effective at doing that anywhere. And your computer science, mathsy background probably helped.
Yeah, I mean, back when marketing was first invented, it was both about getting the word out, but also it was about research. Right? A lot of it was sending surveys and interviewing customers and understanding pain points. And marketing departments at companies, especially the early like 1900s, with kind of the rise of these big international companies, a lot of what marketing departments did was research and was analyzing data. And so marketing has always been very tied, I would say, to data science and big data and combing through data to understand trends and use those insights to power language and imagery. And so, yeah, it has always been operating this, the intersection of data and creativity. And so it is quite interesting. But yeah, I mean, you have Edward Bernays and the classic propaganda book, which is, he's kind of like the inventor of marketing. And this is a deep data approach to getting the word out and understanding consumer behavior and intent. And this book was written like over 100 years ago in the 1910s. And so it's interesting. The history of marketing is also a fascinating space. But yeah, data and creativity is definitely where marketing kind of operates.
I haven't heard of this book that was written in the 1910s. What's the title?
It's called Propaganda, and it's by a guy named Edward Bernays.
Okay. Okay, I'll look that up after this episode. So because this is a data science podcast, I'm very interested in learning a bit more about how OmniKey works under the hood. I gather from the way you've been talking that generative AI is the main AI technology you make use of, but are there other types of AI and machine learning models also present?
Yeah, so a big part of applying generative AI in the context of marketing and our product is analytics and insights. And so there you have, you have non-generative AI, which is just simple computer vision, you know, identifying the elements within an image or a video and understanding trends of how those creative elements are driving higher engagement. And then you also have multimodal AI. So you have an AI that's able to understand an image and understand a video and explain the features of an image or of a video and then find trends in those features as well. So historically, design was really hard to quantify because machines weren't very good at understanding images and videos. Now AI is very good at understanding images and videos through its multimodal capability. It can understand an image, kind of explain that in text form, as well as through computer vision. And so now that design can be quantified, you can get a lot of rich insights about fundamentally what are the stories that are resonating and driving engagement for your brand. What types of content, what types of stories within your piece of in your advertising are resonating for distinct audiences. And that's what we can garner through our system, where we ingest all the advertised data, we tag all the content, and we discover trends in the creative features of that piece of content to then generate new ideas, new pieces of content that we suggest for the customer that we think will drive higher engagement, higher sales for that brand.
So still can't visualize what you've just said there. Can you give me an example of how that would work?
Sure. So let's say that there's a certain persuasion tactic that is driving. So maybe you are a medical device company. And so you've connected your ad platforms. We've run a bunch of A/B tests and we discover that a certain authoritative voice drives higher sales. And we get that because we've tagged every creative and we can say this creative uses an authoritative language and this one isn't. And then we say, okay, well, when it comes to selling this medical device product to this particular audience, maybe for people within a certain age range in California, having this authoritative voice drives higher engagement. So therefore we can create more content there with this creative feature included with more of an authoritative voice that we believe will drive additional sales for this company.
So I think you mentioned previously that you've got A/B testing capabilities built into the OmniKey platform. Would those A/B testing capabilities be used to determine that the authoritative voice is significantly better at driving sales than the non-authoritative voice?
Yeah. So what our system does is it will generate a bunch of ideas. So we have this creative brief tool, AI creative brief. It generates a bunch of ideas. This is some suggested copy. This is some suggested imagery. And you can turn any of those ideas into an ad. You can launch those pieces of content and you can see, well, what's actually driving sales. And this analysis is done partly through A/B testing, also kind of more of like a multi-arm bandit approach where you're running a lot of ads and it's not just distinctly testing one or two like A and B image, but you're testing dozens of imagery and you're saying, okay, out of the ads that performed, what were the features they had in common? And out of the ads that didn't perform, what were the features they had in common? And you can use that to then get insights about, you know, what kind of messages resonated for you with your consumer.
And because you can generate so much advertising content, it provides more fuel for creating more experiments so you can get more data to fine-tune things more so than if you just were dealing with a human content creator.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's that saying, it's like quantity has a quality of its own. But if you can replace a qualitative system with a quantitative system and you can kind of turn like something that used to be qualitative into some kind of a brute force approach. But yeah, just by testing more content, you can get to an optimal performance faster because you're getting more insights, you're getting more data, and that can then create faster feedback loop in terms of optimizations.
So basically what you're describing is a lean startup approach to advertising.
Lean startup approach to advertising. That's interesting. Yeah, gosh, I've never really heard it phrased like that, but I guess maybe that's kind of the intuitive way of one intuitive way of viewing it is, yeah, just test a lot of things quickly and see what works and then use data to kind of optimize versus the other approach. And also to your point, when it comes to lean startups, I think this is so important because it is a technique that can be used by startups as well as big enterprises. So you don't need to be. If anything, our mission is democratize growth. And so we want to let more small businesses quickly find their audience and quickly find the messaging that's resonating with their audience with this technology and grow their business. And many of our customers are startups. In fact, most of our customers today are startups. And so, yeah, like to your point, they intuitively understand this data-driven approach to testing content, to testing messaging. And so, yeah, there's a lot there behind what you've just said as of Omniki being kind of this lean startup approach way of advertising.
So with all these models that you've got, like your computer vision model, your multimodal model, your generative AI model, did you train all your own models from scratch, or are you making use of pre-trained models?
Yeah, we're making use of pre-trained models. Our system is a mixture of experts. So it's not just one model. To your point, there's different models for insight analytics, and there's different model for generations. And yeah, so we built a system and a workflow that lets our customers harness the state of our generative AI technology to power the growth in advertising. But and it isn't just one model. And it's not all completely built in-house. Like all the subcomponents aren't necessarily like something we create from scratch, every individual component.
One thing that we're seeing at the moment, particularly with Gen AI, is that there's basically this arms race between all the big Gen AI companies. So OpenAI launches their new version of GPT, and then Anthropic launches their new version of Claude, and then Google's onto their new version of Gemini. And yeah, it seems like there's an announcement every week. Does that present any challenges for you with that constant state of change?
No, I love it. they say chaos is a ladder. And so, yeah, I think it's great that there's a lot of change. I mean, that's what creates opportunities for startups, is we can be more faster and agile than big, slower companies. And so the more volatility there is, the more opportunity there are for new companies and startups. I mean, if anything, I predict that it's going to even get crazier from here.
It's actually good to hear that, because one thing that I find talking to people who are in startup type situations, or people who are working in a situation like a sole person who has absolute flexibility over what they do, you hear that these people are constantly moving between different Gen AI models as one improves over the other. So, for example, I've heard a lot of people who started off by using the GPT models, and now a lot of people much prefer Claude Sonnet from Anthropic, so they're switching. And I presume at some point in the future, there'll be something else that's better and people will switch back or whatever. And that agility allows you to keep pursuing the best. Whereas with some of the massive companies that I've worked for in the past as an employee, basically it took so long to get in place a contract with a big company like, for example, a Microsoft, that once that was in place, it didn't matter if another company came up with something better that was than Microsoft's tools, you were stuck with Microsoft for life.
Yeah, and I would say that's true if the technology isn't 10x better. But if the technology and the change is 10x better, then sometimes you are willing to move to a new player. And so the opportunity that startups bring, and that is the case, is that every 6 months, the technology is substantially better. Image generation today, I would maybe say it's 10x better, but it is definitely some significant multiple better than it was 6 months ago and 6 months before that. And the same thing for copy generation and understanding context and all these things. And so that then decreases the switching cost of switching to a newer provider. I think it is fair to say that currently, as of today, in August of 2024, that a lot of my smartest friends seem to have moved from OpenAI to Anthropic, and they're now working for Anthropic, whereas they used to work for OpenAI. And there's a real movement even in the talent that I see in Silicon Valley. And I think that's also, there's certainly an excitement around Claude and the fact that it's very good at language in particular. Maybe not as good at the multimodal stuff yet, but it's very good at its language capabilities. And so, yeah, to your point, this observation you mentioned, I'm seeing that too, both on the talent side and in the application side. And the thesis behind OmniKey is we started back in 2018. So we've been through many of these changes and platform shifts, really. Because the thesis is always that, and this is kind of growing up in the technology family, and even the thesis I had back when I started OmniKey was, you can actually see one of the early decks I wrote back in 2019, which I share with the team, is that like this technology is advancing, Moore's law, right? It's kind of the exponential rate which technology improves. It's really hard to intuit exponential change, but you definitely develop some kind of intuition regarding exponential change when you kind of grew up surrounded by technology. And I definitely felt that back when I saw this technology a decade ago in college, exponential, this is going to surpass human ability within a decade. I think we have now achieved that. And back in 2018, I thought we were pretty near the kind of inflection point of surpassing human technology, which is why I started the company in 2018. And so the thesis for starting Omniki was the underlying models are going to constantly keep changing, getting better. For me, the question was, I want to stay as close to the consumer as possible. I want to stay as close to the user as possible, the advertiser, and just keep providing them the state-of-the-art technology via a workflow tool to empower them to stay on top of all this change. And so we always viewed ourselves as an applications company where we will kind of switch out the underlying models. You know, we start with fine-tuned GPT-2 models, and then we switch to GPT-3, and then we switch to GPT-4, and maybe there's now a little bit of Llama and Claude and all these things. Like, that has been the evolution of the company, because the initial idea behind the company was we'd always just keep switching out the underlying models as the technology advanced and focus on building the best workflow for our customer. And that doesn't change. The pain point the customers have don't change. The need for more effective content doesn't change. Having a workflow that incorporates data into the creative process doesn't change. And so that's what we've always been focused on. Therefore, the constant improvements on the underlying models only benefit our business.
It's been 6 years since you first started in 2018, and it's been less than 2 years since the launch of ChatGPT. Did your original vision of OmniKey include generative AI, or is that something that you've just added in along the way?
No, I mean, you can read our PR releases from 2019 and 2020. OmniKey generates personalized ads at scale. OmniKey generates personalized content at scale in our earliest pieces of media. And it's because, you know, there was a seminal paper, Attention Is All You Need, comes out in 2017. So, and then GPT-1 comes out in 2018. So generative AI was kind of already in the know, I would say, in Silicon Valley amongst machine learning people. And I specialize in studying machine learning in college. And so we've been following that technology closely. So we were a generative AI company from day one.
So you're really ahead of your time.
Gosh, yeah, I guess you could say that. I think we're the first mover in advertising, definitely in advertising for generative AI. And I think we were the first generative AI company to pitch at and present as a finalist at TechCrunch Disrupt. Yeah, we're the first mover in the space.
So being the first mover in the space, you must be in a unique position to have observed what impact AI has had on the advertising industry. How have you seen it impacting the people in the industry, both the creative people and the non-creative people?
You know, it's interesting. The first couple of years, well, the creative people have kind of poo-poo-poo the technology in the early days, right? It's like generative AI, it's all kind of fake, or it's not real, or it's not going to happen. And that was kind of the first couple of years, was like being like, this is so cool. You can generate copy and it generates, you know, some imagery. And they're like, yeah, but it's never going to replace humans. It's never going to be better than humans. And so I think the first couple of years was a real challenge in terms of like even getting creative people to even try out technology and buy into the technology. And then now, especially with GPT, it's kind of like hit. It's very obvious now that this is a very real thing, very powerful. And now I think everyone's scrambling in terms of trying to figure out, well, what do we do with this technology? And I think in terms of the adoption curve, seems like people now realize the potential for this technology. And there's, I would say, a mixture of depression and excitement. But definitely, I would say, some fear, depression, and excitement about this technology. I was at an advertising conference earlier this year, or actually a couple months ago, and I was at the same advertising conference maybe like 4 or 5 years ago. And this year, the advertising conference, the keynote speakers was Elon and Mirati from OpenAI. And the idea that 5 years ago, if I were to say this advertising festival, which is based on creativity, keynote speakers would be two entrepreneurs running AI companies, they would probably not believe you. So yeah, it's definitely shifted quite significantly over the past couple of years.
You see the same thing with Hollywood. At one point in time, the film companies were the big companies in the world. And then you had Coca-Cola taking over Columbia. So basically soft drink was the big thing that was taking over the movie industry. Now you've got Amazon owning MGM. So it seems like you can see the shift of power in the world.
It's a great point, you know, and I think the content business is a hit-driven business, and it's a tough business to be in. And so it's always been owned by the most profitable business of that era. And so now these companies are owned by the Amazons and Apples. But previously, I think GM owned ABC, and I think AT&T owns a big, the most profitable company of that era buys a content company as a form of marketing for their main business almost, and to get good PR for their business. Because hits-driven businesses are tough. You need to produce a lot of content. It takes a lot of money to invest in good content that really differentiates you from all the other content that's out there. And sometimes keep that business going on for a long time, you need almost like a corporate parent that has a very profitable money-making engine separate from the core business that can kind of fund the production of content. And so, yeah, look at any point in corporate history and look at who owned these, say, the content companies of, say, Hollywood. You know, in the 1980s, you mentioned Coca-Cola, but also Sony, right, is an electronics company that bought a content company. So now it's Apple. You can look at who were the corporate owners of every era, and it's usually the high margin profitable business of that era that end up buying a content producing company as part of almost like buying goodwill and buying favorable media for themselves.
Yeah, because it's easier to predict future sales of Coca-Cola soft drinks than it is to predict whether a movie's going to be a hit or not. Because if you could predict whether a movie was going to be a hit or not, there would be no flops.
This is true for movies. This is true for news too. News is also very expensive because like a good news where you have investigative journalists spending many years diving deep into a topic, and you know, it's also hits driven too. Like only some of those investigative research amounts to something where they discover some story that's newsworthy.
Watergate type thing.
Yeah, like Watergate type thing, exactly. That was a many year investment that could have led to nothing or could have led to the destruction of the business. So it was a really risky move. And so you need to have a corporate parent that's willing to invest long-term into research and content production. And so whether you're a newspaper or in the entertainment business, it's driven. And I think you can even say the same thing about the Elon acquiring Twitter is actually part of this trend because Twitter is also a content business. Now, that said, Twitter's content cost is not in content production because it's all UGC. It's in content moderation, which is actually just as expensive, it turns out. The idea was there was a free launch, right? That because users are providing the content, it's just pure profit business. You run ads against user-generated content, pure profits. Well, actually not true because actually user-generated content, a lot of that stuff is not advertiser-friendly and advertisers don't want to run ads against most or a lot of UGC that... And so you actually need to invest a lot into content management. And Meta spends a lot of money in content management, and Google spends and YouTube spends a lot of money in content management. And that actually the margins aren't as good as people think it is. And so that was the situation that Twitter was in, is that their business, it was a struggling business. And essentially Tesla, electric self-driving car company, buy a content business, which was Twitter. So self-driving car is clearly the future. Electronic cars, clearly the future, high margin business, high growth business, buying content company, in this instance, Twitter. And so you mentioned Coca-Cola and MGM, but even the Tesla, Elon, Twitter deal, I would say, was also along this trend of a high margin growth company buying a content platform.
So what does this all mean for the content creators themselves?
I would say it's an exciting time for content creators. If you're a really great content creator, you're going to have more scale and more reach and more brand recognition and probably become wealthier than was previously imaginable. If you're the top 0.01% of content creators, like you know, Taylor Swift, you're going to be a billionaire and the world's your oyster. But the competition is also a lot fiercer too, because now anybody can be a content creator or more people can be a content creator. So I would say it's a fiercer competition, but if you're the winner, the reward is probably greater than ever before.
So if you're a bad content creator, you're going to be beaten by AI. But if you're a good content creator who knows how to harness the power of AI, then there are lots of riches to be had.
If you have some deep lock on the culture, which is kind of what content creators are, right, is you have some deep insight into the culture. You know, you're Ryan Reynolds, and I would say he's just a content creator. He's also a very skilled business person. He's able to use his understanding of the culture to promote his businesses, then yeah, the world's your oyster. And if you can use AI, use technology and understand all of it, it's not just AI too. There's a lot of other technologies that the best content producers today and the most famous celebrities today are harnessing to power their brands and to connect with their fans. If you're that 0.1% of people who can do that, then it's like a really great time for you. And if you can't, compete, then yeah, it's gonna be tougher. It's like due to like human psychology and kind of mass psychology, there is kind of a winner take most feature in for content creation and in being an influencer and in being a celebrity. And so the population can only understand, you know, have in their mind, right? You don't have so many famous people in your head that you can kind of recall and remember. And so you need to be one of those 160 people, right? If you're a celebrity that like is like global in its reach. And so that the competition to be one of those 160 people in the minds of everybody, it's fierce. But if you can be one of those.
It's the evolutionary thing. We can only have as many people as there were in a medieval village in our mind at one time.
Exactly. And so what celebrities are able to do is they're able to be one of those people. But the competition is fierce.
So what's next for OmniKey and for AI more generally?
Yeah, so what's next for OmniKey and AI? It's to continue to do what we have been doing, which is being the best tool for advertisers to utilize state-of-art generative AI to power their storytelling and to connect with customers. And that means generating great product photos at scale. It means generating compelling video content at scale. It means providing richer insights about what types of content is resonating with consumers. It's by being a better workflow tool that integrates the different divisions of a company from their creative team to their marketing team so that you know, you can produce data-driven content faster and drive business outcomes faster.
Okay, so what final advice would you give to data scientists looking to create business value from data?
So I guess my suggestion to them is, but I'm sure they're already doing this, is just keep testing and playing around with the latest and greatest technology and tools, like always be learning. But that does seem like kind of a generic advice. But I think if you're a data scientist in this age, like, it's already a really great time frame, and it's probably just keep doing more of what you're doing, which is keep learning and keep playing around with new tools and technologies and just keeping at it. Because I think we're still at the very early innings of this revolution.
So for listeners who want to learn more about you or get in contact, what can they do?
Yeah, so you can definitely follow me on X at HISENJU. You can follow me on LinkedIn or add me on LinkedIn, Hikari Senju. You can follow our socials. It's at on basically most of the major platforms, LinkedIn, Facebook, X, YouTube. Sign up for a demo on our website, omniKey.com. And also feel free to send me an email at hi@omniKey.com.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining me today, Hikari.
Thank you so much for having me, Genevieve.
And for those in the audience, thank you for listening. I'm Dr. Genevieve Hayes, and this has been Value Driven Data Science, brought to you by Genevieve Hayes Consulting.